We've all heard about red flags and yellow flags and green flags when it comes to church leaders, but we want to talk a little bit more about where is that line where a red flag becomes a green flag or a green flag becomes a red flag. Let's talk about it. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about where the line is for pastors, red flags, yellow flags, green flags, and church leaders. And we just want to talk a little bit about, like, where do we draw the line on when things start to become red flags for pastors? Kind of interesting topic, I think, and something we've found in the past that when we've done content around drawing red flags and toxicity and church leadership and stuff, we tend to get a lot of actually healthy conversation around it and encouraging to pastors is the feedback we get. So we wanted to dive in a little bit deeper on that today. So I think it should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree, Thomas. And I think it's helpful too, because, you know, these things are important. Everyone wants a healthy pastor, right? Everyone wants a pastor operating. And no pastor's perfect, of course, but we want pastors operating in a healthy spiritual manner. And of course, adhering to what the Bible teaches as far as being a leader. And so, very good to identify some of these things. Yeah,
that's it. So we have a ranking system. It should be pretty obvious, but the green flags, they are positive traits that you want in your pastor. Yellow flags are kind of like right on the line. You might want to watch out for that. And red flags are kind of like, you better talk to somebody about this pretty quick. And
I know you as a pastor, you're always liking the yellow. You're just
I'm a yellow guy. Yeah, so. I'm a big yellow. Yeah, so right, like to ride the line, if you will.
That's right. So well, good. Yeah. Why don't we dig into them, Thomas? And
I guess you want to just kind of ask me about them, and I'll kind of give you my feedback, and you can chime in with other thoughts on stuff.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
No, that sounds like a plan. And I think the first one here is, where's the line on a pastor being accountable, accountability?
Yeah, so at first glance, like you would think that this is obviously, if they are accountable, it's a green flag, and if they're unaccountable, that it's a red flag. And that's true. Yeah. Like that's accurate. I think that there's some nuance in this here, because sometimes pastors get accused of not having accountability because they don't have their primary accountability within the church. Right. So, and that I think in a lot of ways is actually a healthy way for a pastor to have accountability. Yeah. So I'm from a tradition, I'm a pastor within Foursquare, and in Foursquare, we're a Episcopal model of church. So that's not to say we're an Episcopal church, but we are a Episcopal in our governance, which means that people that decide on our pastors are outside of the church and like kind of overseers or supervisors. Bishops is a term they may use in other kind of traditions, as opposed to the elders or the board or the council at the church that's being the one holding the pastor primarily accountable to stuff. So there is accountability in the church. We have a church council and that kind of stuff at the same time. But a lot of times I've found that people expect that a pastor is going to go to the members of his church and be accountable to them.
Right.
And, you know, if your pastor is struggling with something, maybe he's, I don't know, struggling with whatever sin you want to talk about, whether it be lust or, greed or whatever it is.
Huffing
in a lot of cases, it's not healthy for that pastor to go to members of his church and say, hey, I've really been struggling with my lust lately. I want you to pray for me for this issue, right?
Right.
So, like, could he? I suppose he could. Is it wise to do that? Maybe not. But should a pastor have accountability about those things? Absolutely. It's just a lot of times it should be outside of the church when it comes to these kinds of issues there. So that's what I would advise most pastors, is get that accountability. But if your pastor isn't accountable to people in your church on issues of sin and those kinds of things, I wouldn't call that a red flag. So I guess that's kind of the line I'm drawing there.
I agree. And this is the reason why I keep you straight all the time, Thomas, and not people at your church. So there you go.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So anyway,
honestly, on a positive note, I think we have been doing that for each other for years.
We have.
Coworkers.
All the joking aside.
Things, that's it.
Yeah. And you know how much you've had to help me. My goodness, I'm a mess. So, but anyway.
I always know though, because I'll get a call from you, Ian, usually you'll be upset with me for a while, and then when you calm down a little bit, it's like, you need to have a talk. And so I need to talk to you about something, and then we kind of get over it. And anyway, things typically go. So
absolutely, no, in full transparency. So, all right, this next one's interesting, favoritism.
Yeah. All right. So is favoritism a, like, so again, this is all going to sound kind of obvious, right? So is favoritism a good thing or a bad thing? You know, we automatically think of it as a bad thing.
Right.
So sometimes pastors get accused of favoritism for things that I think are normal, healthy things that we do in a church.
Yeah.
So perhaps like you've heard the rule, I forget the name of the principle, but the 80-20 rule is what people will call it a lot, where 80% of the people do 20% of the work and 20% of the people do 80% of the work at the church.
Right.
And this is true for just about every aspect of life, this 80-20 principle. Yeah. But like sometimes pastors will be comfortable asking some of the same people to do things around the church. And sometimes that can be perceived as favoritism because they're asking someone who is gifted in an area, has been faithful for a long time. They'll ask him or her to do those kinds of things. And sometimes that's perceived as being favoritism. So what I would say when it comes to favoritism is it's not always an automatic red flag if you see, well, you know, our church leaders always seem to ask these same people to do these kinds of things or invite them into discipleship groups and not other people. You know, that's biblical. Like, did Jesus seem to show favoritism maybe to people like the ones he, like to John and James and those guys that he was closest to? Yeah. I mean, it seems like you could make an argument. And that's, I think, a lot of what happens in the Gospel of John when he spends a lot of time referring to himself as like the apostle that Jesus loved, or he refers to, he very clearly says that he beat Peter to the tomb to see that Jesus was risen, right? So there's like kind of this like trying to earn the Lord's favor almost. That you see in this favoritism that they're competing for in a way. So
who will be the greatest? Yeah,
exactly. That. Yeah. That's the other question, right? Who will be the greatest in the kingdom? So there's obviously a problem that was, it predates our churches today. It's from the very beginning. I think sometimes things that are perceived as favoritism are not in fact favoritism, but in general, is favoritism a bad thing? Yes. But I think the line is probably when it moves past that level of people operating according to their giftings and just how the Spirit's leading that pastor there. So not always a red flag.
It's funny. Came to mind as don't confuse favoritism with someone who has favor.
So, that's good. That'll preach.
So there you go. Like you can use that on Sunday since I'm not preaching. So there you go. But anyway. All right. Next one. This one, gossiping. So obviously here. So yes.
Okay, so this one's tricky too, right? Because like one man's prayer request is another man's gossip, right?
Yeah,
So it's a little bit funny. I think this is something that pastors probably need to be more careful with than a lot of us are.
Yeah.
Because I think if we're being really honest, sometimes we like to, like there's something in us that likes to share these stories in our deepest kind of our sin nature. We like to share these kinds of stories that maybe would contain the downfall of other people or bad thing happening to people. Is that to say you can't pray or mention what's happening or every prayer request has to be unspoken or something like that? No. But I think that it is something that pastors need to be more careful of than I think a lot of pastors are. Yeah. I know that's something in my own heart is that I want to, you know, really be careful with this. But you know, there is a place for honesty, obviously, in pastoral leadership is that, you know, we have a directional team at my church and we're very candid about the things and the real struggles or, you know, sin that people are facing within our church. Yeah. And, you know, if someone says, you know, please don't talk to the other pastors or anybody else about this, the pastor uses discretion on those kinds of things. But by and large, it's fair game and it really is. To be able to better disciple people. So something to watch out for. I think it can tend to be more red flaggy than people maybe think it can in the ministry.
Right. Yep, agreed. So this next one's a little interesting. Silencing, and specifically meaning not hearing other people out or certain people out, and then silencing other people's voices. So, you know, is that ever okay? And if so, when?
Yeah, so this one is actually harder than I think the other ones we've talked about so far because there is a place where like it kind of goes hand in hand with the gossiping, right? So if someone is speaking poorly about your church or you know speaking poorly about the leaders of your church, a clear violation of scripture to do those kinds of things if, you know, it's Again, it's kind of this weird line of like, we want to be, there's a place for whistleblowing. Like if someone has experienced something really unhealthy or sinful at your church, you want people to have that freedom to be able to speak out in the right channels and have those conversations. If someone, if there was a, some kind of like a molestation or something that happens at a church, you're probably not supposed to say those kinds of things on YouTube. So if those kinds of things were to happen, then, you know, you want to have people have the freedom and not feel beholden. Like, well, I don't want to speak poorly about the church. You want that out there. Like you want to go to the authorities on those kinds of things and have them deal with it. But at the same time, when it comes to like more preference type issues, you know, maybe someone doesn't like the style of music of the new worship leader or doesn't like their voice or something, and they're trying to tell everybody else, hey, don't you think this new worship leader really isn't up to snuff and good enough of a worship leader for our church? That's unhealthy fighting within the church. Like, you don't want to be that. So there's a place for what some would consider silencing and kind of having some conversations and saying, hey, I don't think that's constructive to talk to those people. If you have a problem with that, you know, come talk to me as the leader of the church or to, you know, talk to the worship leader themselves about an issue that they're having there. So walking them through the scripture that teaches us how to handle these kinds of conflicts. Now, will you be accused of silencing sometimes if you do that? Yeah, probably that'll happen. But I guess I just want to say it's not as cut and dry. Like in general, silencing is bad. But again, like shutting down gossip is also kind of, some people may perceive that as silencing and something that you need to be kind of okay with at some times.
Yeah, that's a good way to explain it. Yeah, it takes wisdom on that one big time. So, but all right, next one, transparency.
Okay, so transparency is a generally good trait. Like we want pastors, I think in general, should be transparent. However, they shouldn't be completely transparent because you'll lose a lot of your pastoral authority if you're completely transparent with your entire church about everything you've ever done. So, you know, you're not going to say, hey, I was really struggling with lust towards you when you're speaking out to your entire church. Like, you don't do those. Yeah. We know these things, right? So like, that's obvious. You can't be 100% transparent with your church. Yeah. Should you confess those things to somebody? Yes, you should. But you don't want to be fully transparent with your church all the time. But I think giving away like some pieces of transparency, like, you know, just having people within your church know, you know, I really was struggling with anger this week. Yeah. I was upset. Nothing was going my way. We had all these house repair issues. And I even got a little bit heated towards my kids. And just having that kind of transparency, like letting people know about that stuff, I think that is valuable and a total green flag. You know, I celebrate pastors that do those kinds of things. But if you're being too revealing, I think that can become even a red flag, I would say. So that's kind of where I see it.
Good stuff. Next one would be ignorance.
Like what do you mean?
Like, well, specifically ignorance. Ignoring problems or maybe coming off as unaware of problems within the church.
Yeah, so this usually, in my view, it stems from pastors that are afraid of conflict. Is that you usually were aware, but we don't want to lead on. You just figure, like, if I just ignore it for a few weeks, this will blow over. And there is a case to be made for that sometimes. Not every single problem you ever hear about your church needs a full addressing from the pulpit on Sunday morning, right? You don't need to address everything that way. So it really is, the line is like, is this going to affect, is this going to be something that grows in its infection within our church, right? So if someone is, we were using that example of someone complaining about the worship leader, it might need to be addressed and you don't need to just be ignorant. If it's one person who you overheard told your, you know, another person in your church that they didn't like the worship leader, I probably don't do anything. I don't rebuke them immediately for that. But if you hear it from five people and she seems to be telling this, or tells this to everybody, and then they're telling it to other people too, then it's starting to be kind of an infection that's going around at your church there. And you want to probably make sure you address it. So that's probably the line when it goes beyond one statement to multiple statements, depending on what kind of a topic it is. But assuming it's kind of a minor gossip issue or something like that, I think if it's infecting lots of people, then it needs to be probably publicly addressed and something you should not be ignorant of.
Yep, totally agree. So next one is, where's the line on blaming?
Okay. So this is one that I think we have a temptation to do at times, like just because there's a problem in the church, doesn't necessarily mean that it's the lead pastor that made the mistake. But in the end, the lead pastor of the church, if he's a true leader or she's a true leader, then it actually would reflect on them as well too. And they need to take ownership of those kinds of things. So for me, blaming is a really big, it's a pet peeve of mine. And I deal with this, you know, anybody who's been a parent, you kind of deal with this. If you're a parent to multiple kids, especially, it's always my brother or sister's fault that this is the condition that it's in. So it's something that I think that is always a pet peeve. I think as a pastor, taking ownership wherever you possibly can is a huge positive, and it only reflects well on you if you say, hey, you know, I know that our youth guy, he probably shouldn't have said that when he was giving announcements on Sunday.
Yeah.
but that's on me. Like, I probably should have. It's actually, I probably didn't train him enough to be able to be ready to be in that position. So I'm going to work on that. I want you to, like, talk to me if you have an issue on this. I'm going to own that part of it. And he and I are going to work more together to get this resolved. You know, those kinds of things. That's really, really valuable.
And that shows humility too. So, but this next one's kind of a little interesting. It sounds like it, at least. Sharing, and i.e., I guess, sharing responsibilities, information, those types of things.
Yeah. So responsibilities, I think, is almost always a green flag.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's good. Like, sometimes maybe people think it's a red flag. Our pastor asks us to do everything in our church.
Yeah. And, she's not doing anything.
So it's like, if he's not, like, if the pastor's not preaching ever because he has other people do it, maybe, you know, that's probably too much sharing. Like, if he never preaches. And just kind of delegates everything.
Yeah.
But, like, delegating and actually leading, it should be about sharing responsibilities. That's what it is. Like, that's what leadership really is helping organize people towards a common goal. And that's what you're doing there. I think it's very rare for me to find a pastor that gives, like, shares or delegates too much of their ministry. It can happen. Yeah. I just don't see it very often. The other side of it, things like sharing information and that kind of stuff, oversharing, there's definitely some lines. I've heard it said this way: if you're sharing information with someone that has no part in the solution, then that's probably oversharing, right? So if they don't play any kind of a part in fixing the problem, then you're sharing too much information. So that's kind of the line for me on that.
Yeah, that's good. This next one is a good one: boundaries. So what are healthy boundaries versus unhealthy boundaries?
Yeah. So I think all church leaders should have some kind of boundaries. We talked about several of them, like from accountability to sharing boundaries to workload boundaries. I think pastors in general err on the side of having too few boundaries and not too many boundaries.
Yeah.
And that's a general statement. I'm sure there's a fraction of pastors that that have too many boundaries. But I know for me, in my challenge is not having enough boundaries in the things that I'm doing with my family time, those kinds of things. And so we need to be really intentional about that kind of stuff. Where is the line? It's going to be different depending on your capacity and who you are. But I don't think we should really, very rarely should we see boundaries that a pastor has set up as a red flag. I've heard this sometimes, like a lot of times, there's lots of ways that pastors and their spouses get involved in ministry. And I know as a pastor, I've had a wife that I've co-pastored with. And at other times, she's been just like not a co-pastor and just been more of my wife. And that's okay. Yeah. And sometimes people would have a hard time with they have certain expectations on a pastor's wife that she is to be at every service and lead the women's ministry and be involved with every food chain and prayer team. Yeah. And there's just huge expectations. And like, if she wants those things, that's great. And they can do that. But at the same time, the requirements, there should be boundaries that she can draw saying that, you know, I am not the pastor. I'm married to the pastor, but I am a member of this church and I'm involved in this church. And she probably ought to feel like a normal member of the church, but she should be able to draw boundaries beyond that and make sure that she's not getting too far into things.
Yeah, that's good. A few more here. Overextension. Okay.
Overextension. Yeah. So this is something that I think is probably a common problem with pastors, and it should be a red flag. If your pastor is doing too much, I think it usually stems back to the not delegating enough or not sharing enough. They become overextended on things. And so, yeah, if you see a pastor who's just always going and they're out every single weeknight and and weekends, they're working the whole time. They don't have a Sabbath. That is a red flag. Like if you see a pastor that's doing that. So I think a lot of pastors fall into that, and it's something you need to watch out for. It's not like I'm leaving this church because my pastor works too hard. But I do think it is something that you want to do anything that you can to help a church leader get into a healthy place if they're overextending themselves in that way.
Yeah, and it's a good segue in these last two here, but prioritization. So meaning what are green flag priorities versus red flag priorities?
A pastor, it's such a all-encompassing job, right? A church leader, it's like there's no job that is, maybe president or something like that is less compartmentalized, but like your work life is your home life, is your life. Like it's all the same, but that's the natural, the way it is. You have to do those things well. So your prioritization needs to be like normal Christian practices, like loving your wife well, loving your kids well, having a good devotional life, having good prayer times, being a worshiper of the Lord, like being all, and those things are green flag priorities. And frankly, if a pastor is primarily focused on getting things done, making sure they're at events, being in the church office, and to the extent that it's actually hurting their other priorities, their Christian disciplines, they're loving their family, that's when it becomes a red flag. So that's kind of the dividing line for me, is that when it usurps the things that we're called to do as followers of Jesus, then they're becoming red flags.
Yeah. And last but not least, burnout.
Burnout. Okay. So I think the question here is like, is burnout a red flag?
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it's burnout's not healthy. You don't want pastors to be burnt out.
Yeah.
Sometimes this is a word that's used just kind of casually. People say it as another way of saying I'm tired. So, which is not what I'm talking about with this here. If someone says I'm burnt out, it means like I'm really tired. That's not it. This is like,
it's
if someone
is
like
indication of something, right?
So and I think it's, well, I'll say this too, is that a lot of times in my view, burnout is a spiritual condition, not a physical condition. Because there have been seasons for most of us where we've been we've worked so hard and we've just gone day and night, and we just really pour everything into our families, our ministry, and everything's clicking and it feels great. Like that, I've been in those kinds of seasons and I don't feel burnt out at all. And there have been times where I have done much, much less work. And I do feel a little bit of burnout symptoms and things happening. And so it's a spiritual condition first and foremost. I think if you're dealing with as a pastor, you're dealing with burnout regularly, like it's not like a one-time thing that you're feeling, but like you felt burnt out every Wednesday and then now it's creeping into your Fridays, you're just exhausted. I think that's something to go to the Lord to and like deal with the spiritual condition that's causing that. But if your pastor is regularly going through that, it's really a yellow, borderline red kind of flag when it gets to that place. So that's kind of my two cents on that.
It's good. Well, awesome. We had a little bit of a list there, but we hope all helpful to folks for sure.
I'd love to hear anybody else's thoughts on things too. If I got these wrong, or if you have another kind of thing that you've seen as a clear red flag marker that you always see or you've seen before in pastors, let us know down in the comments, guys. Thanks for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
See ya.